Names of God. Is Jesus God? One name given to God in Scripture is El Gibor, the Mighty God. One occurrence of this name stands out. In Isaiah chapter 9, El Gibor is the name given to the promised Messiah. Jesus is that promised Messiah. He is God incarnate. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Here's a horrible new trend. Human swiping. This is Wretched Radio. Admit it, you do it, I do it, we all do it, some more, some less, but we all swipe. You're looking at your cell phone, you don't like it, you swipe it. You're done with it, you swipe it. It doesn't give you a dopamine hit, you swipe it. And by the way, speaking of dopamine hits and short attention spans, on the way back from Huntsville, Jimmy, I don't know if I mentioned we were in Huntsville, Alabama.
You were.
On the drive back, Mrs. Friel said, oh, we've got to listen to this interview that Tucker Carlson did with a woman. That's right. I don't know her name. It was 2 hours and like 20 minutes long. Wow, it was long. And I'm telling you, the drive from Huntsville to Atlanta, lovely. And even the roads. Alabama, what are you doing there? Because the roads were sweet. We listened to Tucker Carlson interview a woman who, at the age of 13, looking in the mirror, didn't like what she saw. She saw that somehow she wasn't really in control of her life. She came from a very rich part, I think, like Connecticut, something like that, in the Hamptons. And she was competitive, and she was pushed and driven, get good grades, compete in sports. And at the tender age of 13, she looked in the mirror and she just felt like, I'm kind of detached from my own body. And so what happened? She goes to an expert, a professional, who immediately puts her on a cocktail of drugs to help her feel better. And this went on for years for this young lady. She graduated, by the way, from Harvard. So this was not a dumb woman. She was quite intelligent, quite studied, and she was on medication. And she talked about how suicidal she was and how depressed she was and how numb she was. And the conversation continued, and Tucker Carlson was shocked. Well, tell me about, so how did you get this disease? Did you walk by somebody and they sneezed on you and you got a mental illness? How did you get it? And because he was staggered when she said there's no scientific testing behind any of these diagnoses. And he's like, wait a second, none at all? It was the first time apparently that he heard it, because he hadn't read Greg Gifford's book, Lies My Therapist Told Me. Available at FortisInstitute.org/lies or wherever you buy books. And it's doing great, by the way. I hope you are being blessed by Lies My Therapist Told Me by one of our fellows, Greg Gifford. He tackles that subject, that there's no scientific testing that takes place. She said she went to a doc complaining, saying, you know, this is how I'm feeling. First time, writes her a script. As at the peak of her reliance on these medications, 5 different drugs. And it was a really fascinating interview, but the entire time I'm screaming, get Greg Gifford on! You need to talk to Greg Gifford, because Tucker kept saying, well, this had to affect you, like relationally, yeah, and spiritually. So he started to grope into the realm of, you know, where's God in all of this? And what does this do to the human brain and to our thinking? And he was wanting to know what's an alternative to this? And what they ultimately concluded was, you know, getting rid of all of the pressure and just doing more human type things. Oh, okay. You know, you couldn't argue with it, but it didn't get to where it needed to go. They were talking about how medication doesn't deal with the actual issue. And I'm like, yeah, we've been talking about this for years in biblical counseling. There's a root and then there's fruit. And I thought, oh, Tucker needs a copy of Lies My Therapist Told Me, because these two, I'm grateful that she's off of all of her medication. She seems to be doing well. She's married, kids. So, you know, this human flourishing appears to be happening in her life now, and it's maybe her mid-30s. But it didn't go far enough. You got to figure out what's driving it. And so often what is driving it, and did you notice? She stared in the mirror at the age of 13. 13. What happens around the age of 13? Oh, puberty. Imagine a young girl not thinking that she measured up when she looked inside of the mirror. And cell phones contribute to that. Social media contributes to that. A school, TV shows, all says you got to be and look a certain way. And when kids look at it and they realize they don't measure up, they just get bummed. I've been reading a number of studies on social media just within the last 24 hours. Here you go. Right here. This is from, I don't know who wrote this. More Than Addiction, How Screens and Social Media Reshape Our Minds. Screens, particularly those used during early childhood, can fundamentally alter brain development, shorten attention spans, and disrupt emotional and social growth. I would add spiritual. It numbs you. It stunts you. From ages 0 to 6, a child's brain is very, of course it's sensitive. It's in developmental mode. The way it learns to process the world is through sensory input. So touch and movement, sound, taste, facial expressions, eye contact. Screens provide artificial stimulation that floods the brain and doesn't allow it to develop the capacity to tolerate boredom or process subtle cues. In other words, these screens are messing with our brains. And it goes into talking about adults, but it's focusing on kids. And here's what happens every time I read one of these studies and reports on the effects of social media. My brain tends to jump to, ooh, this is going to be a mess when these kids get old. No, they've already gotten old. We've already got a generation, maybe two, that were raised on social media with a screen in front of their face. And it is already affecting them. And that is why 65 million people are medicated in this country. I'm not kidding. The number of 65 million people are medicated, probably more, because I think that stat goes to 2022. Because their brains have been designed and trained unnaturally. They've been trained by something electronic, and we've never seen this before. And we're starting to see the effects, and we don't have to wait for another generation. We're already seeing it. Young children, when they become used to the fast-paced, highly stimulating content on screens, their nervous system struggles to adjust to real-life situations. Now, this is so fascinating. And if you've read Greg's book, and if you've been listening to my interviews with Greg, you're going to go, there it is again. From this article, they enter classrooms expecting the same kind of excitement they get from a screen. And when they don't get it, when they're forced to sit still, when they're forced to do work that they're not excited about, what do? They disengage. And that's when we see attention disorders. And that is when these kids are getting diagnosed with medication because they just can't seem to plug in. They just can't seem to focus. We wonder why. Screens program the brain to seek fast, frequent rewards. Real life meaning doesn't work like that. It's slow, cumulative. It requires effort. But when kids get used to bang, bang, bang being rewarded, too sweet, they lose motivation for more meaningful tasks that take time and effort. That affected that young woman. It is affecting millions of kids right now. This article goes on to suggest, this is what you should do. You should try to start working on limiting screen time. I'm starting to get more persuaded of a harder line opinion, which is never hard for me to do. This article recommends, this expert from the article, ages 0 to 2, avoid screen time entirely. If necessary, only with adult supervision. It's never necessary. Like a kid's going to die if they don't get screen time. But the kid is going to drive a bus over the cliff if he doesn't get screened. There's never a need for it. Ages 3 to 6, their recommendation is 60 to 90 minutes per day. I say I would stick with 0. Elementary school, they recommend 2 hours daily should be the max. I say 0. teens and adults. No hard time limit, but pay close attention to the type of content and how long they're spending on it. Look, I get it. It's harder with teenagers, but this article makes it clear this affects adults too. That adults get the same sort of impact. And they were talking about when you go on a long drive, what do? The passenger, the kids in the back, nobody's sitting and thinking. Nobody's counting the stripes, the little markers on the highway. I remember doing that when we drive from St. Paul to Chicago. I would try to count the number of whatever those stripe, it's a stripe, Friel. Just stick with stripe. I would count them just to keep out. Okay. Not anymore. Give me a screen. I'd look high and low for any semblance of a hill, any sort of topography that was interesting, because the ride from St. Paul to Chicago is a little bit of a snoozer. But you had to think, or you even daydreamed. And we don't even do that anymore as adults. It's affecting our sleep. It's affecting how we view the world, how we view ourselves. And now, guess what? We are seeing it on university campuses, where we are now practicing what I am calling human swiping. Next on Wretched Radio.
Thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. You know, a dollar today doesn't go near as far as it used to. It might buy you a soft drink, but what if your dollars could multiply? For 25 years, our gospel partners have been watching their giving multiply. Every month, their faithful support transforms into college campus evangelism, biblical counseling, marriage restoration, and gospel proclamation across the globe. And when you become an ongoing monthly gospel partner, understand this. You're not just giving money. You're preaching the gospel to a student at Georgia Tech. You're discipling the young man struggling with pornography. And you're equipping a pastor in a small rural church. And the work, it's nowhere near finished. The fields are white for harvest, and your monthly partnership makes it all possible. Join us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner right now by visiting FortisInstitute.org. That's FortisInstitute.org, because when faithful people give faithfully, the gospel advances powerfully. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel. So if we were going to be honest with one another, we would have to admit that every day our phone buzzes with celebrity scandals and political outrage and notifications of TikTok trends, all the stuff that doesn't matter. But what if your phone could deliver something different? Because it can. Meet Fortis Plus. If you haven't already downloaded it yet, I want to urge you to take that opportunity right now. It's free and it will replace noise with nourishment. Picture this, 7 new pieces of content every single day. And I'm not talking clickbait or gossip. I'm talking real truth for real life. The app is already full of hundreds of hours of content. Again, completely free. And when I say free, I mean free. I don't mean hidden costs and temporary trials and premium tiers. No subscription traps at all. Because while everyone else all over the world is selling you something, we are giving something away. Fortis Plus. Download it right now where you download your apps, or just go to fortisplus.org, because what feeds your mind shapes your life. The world says you're broken, a victim of chemical imbalance, just another diagnosis and a long list of mental health labels. But what if they're wrong about you? What if there's a completely different perspective? Dr. Greg Gifford, a Fortis Institute fellow, is challenging everything you've been told about mental health. In our exclusive forum, Psychology versus Scripture, The Truth About Mental Health, Dr. Gifford will reveal why the Bible never describes anxiety, depression, or emotional struggles as diseases, but instead offers a framework of sin, suffering, and sanctification. You're not defined by psychiatric terminology, and there is a path to true transformation that medication alone cannot provide. Join us for an eye-opening Fortis Forum that will help you break free from worldly definitions and find lasting peace in Christ. You can watch this Fortis Forum, available right now for free at fortisplus.org. That's fortisplus.org. Your journey to true transformation begins right now.
Know your reformers. William Tyndale provided the first complete translation of the New Testament into English in 1526. While he was in prison for the crime of translating the Bible, he continued to translate the Old Testament until he was strangled and burned at the stake in 1536. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
before you totally cut yourself off from social media, this is Wretched Radio. If you visit fortisinstitute.org/truth, you'll find all the deets on our matching gift campaign that is going on right now in an effort to help us close the store and give away all of our resources. We give away 90% of our stuff, the other 10% now, the big stuff, the TV series, the Bible studies. We want to give it all away electronically. We're just going to start sending it out around the globe to nations where it's much more difficult to come up with the fees for buying it. No, we're not going to sell it anymore. We're going to give it away. And in order to, well, keep the lights on, I need to somehow replace that revenue. So we're trusting God's people. If you do not have any sort of unmanaged debt, to let us close the store, reach more people, give more stuff away, get into more churches, good, bad, or otherwise. It's truth unhindered. If you'd kindly consider helping us with our match gift campaign, we're getting super close to meeting it. So thank you to everybody who has given. FortisInstitute.org/truth. And once you finish that, get off the internet! Well, okay, at least get it under control, because it appears all of these studies, at least for the kids, and it's not helping us. It's affecting our posture. It affects us how our muscle, what did they call it in this article that I was just reading? The skeletal muscular, it, like, your body doesn't like develop the way that it should because you're just sitting there with your neck craning toward a TV or a little screen. And by the way, this was interesting because I've heard some people retort, hey, well, didn't we used to just sit around and watch TV? And the answer is yes. But even in these people who are experts now on the effects of social media say that's a different experience. That's not the same thing as a screen where you can swipe and swipe and swipe and swipe, which now has translated into human swiping. This was a fascinating, sad article written by one Pamela Paul. The notice of no contact order landed in May's inbox on February 15th, 2022. It was stern and lawyerly, and contained a bulleted list of prohibited behaviors between May, who is a Tulane freshman, and her former roommate. No approaching each other at any time. No communicating through third parties. No social media interactions whatsoever. It was a directive from Tulane's Division of Student Affairs. Was, quote, based on the right of every Tulane community member to avoid contact with another community member if such contact may be harmful or detrimental. And the question, of course, is what's harmful or detrimental? And that's precisely the problem. What is harmful and detrimental is deemed by a generation that has swiped their way through life is anything that doesn't bring them pleasure, anything that agitates or annoys them. They now feel unsafe. That's the word, unsafe. And what happens when a student complains about another student to mom and dad contact the faculty and say, my child feels unsafe. And in our litigious society, the school says, oh, we got to make sure the kid feels safe. What's the issue? Well, their roommate's kind of a pain in the neck. All right, we'll send a cease and desist. And it's being used for virtually everything. And this is, I think, the fruit of kit swipe, 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 swipe. My entire social media life is curated by me. And now you get into a university setting. You've got roommates. You've got fellow students. You've got to work on projects together. You've got more team activities going on. And you don't get to swipe. Well, guess what? They're using no contact orders for human swiping. A Tulane spokesperson said no contact orders are most often used in cases where there is interpersonal conflict that has escalated to the point of disrupting one or both students' studies. All very subjective. This is all about boundaries and borders. Hey, you got to put boundaries around people. That person bothers you, you got to put a boundary around that person. I think that Libby Glosson, I think we're either going to do a lengthier treatment of that together. She's one of our Fortis fellow Etzes. We're going to talk about this issue of boundaries, fencing people out of your life to keep yourself safe. Roommate disputes, ruptures between friends, relationship issues. You know how we used to deal with that? Okay, you sit here, you sit there. Let's work through this. All right, shake hands. Let's move on and get back to business. And what inevitably, by the way, I shouldn't say inevitably, but what regularly happens with those disputes that get resolved face to face, those relationships actually become deeper and sometimes enemies become besties. Not anymore. Some schools' policies are so broadly phrased as to allow students to request no contact orders for a wide range of behaviors to minimize psychological harm, according to Bentley University, or unwanted contact or fear of unwanted contact or problematic interactions. Please note, we are not talking about physical assaults, sexual assaults. That's not in view here. As the article makes clear, this is handing out do not come near me order for just about anything, according to a professor of sociology who specializes in restorative justice and conflict resolution at the University of San Diego. Schools hand them out like candy. We generally know students are increasingly fragile and conflict averse, which leads to increased desire to request a no contact order. Administrators, adolescent psychologists, and sociologists describe Gen Z students as fundamentally different from earlier generations. Okay, fair enough. I think we think that about every generation, but I think fundamentally. So there have been radical changes. All right, what's the new component? Well, you've got a lot of abandonment of religion. I think a lot of touchstones for people are being destroyed and deconstructed. We don't feel connected to much. Everything is just a consumer mindset. We're not a part of a community. We live there, but only as it benefits us. And I think there's social, there's what we get taught through university. All of these issues have indeed changed kind of the fundamental way we process, think, and engage with the world in a more profound way than I think has ever happened, because every generation tends to complain about the prior generation. By the way, whatever your generation is, ask somebody a generation before you what they think about your generation. It's always a lament, but there does seem to be something different here. According to this article, many have difficulty with confrontation and little experience working through interpersonal conflicts. They've mastered the terminology of harassment and discrimination, and they just throw it all over the place. And young people can't interact face to face. The mindset is facilitated by online behaviors that enable kids from an early age to shut out people they dislike or disapprove of. Human swiping. That's what they're going to get to here. This generation of college students grew up in an echo chamber where they could block or filter out voices they disagree with. Swipe, swipe, swipe. Now you go to university and the professor gives you a bad grade, teaches something that you disagree with. Swipe, swipe, rate them poorly online. There's a student that kind of bugs you or just makes you even feel just somewhat like, I don't really care for that person. Swipe. It's an NCO. It's a no contact order, which is human swiping. They're bringing online communication norms to the real world. This is an individual. She's an associate professor at Teachers College at Columbia University. There's a kind of platform logic that's bleeding into campus life. Students are increasingly fluent in digital tools for managing boundaries like blocking, muting, curating their spaces. Can I just tell you, I'm feeling a moment of affirmation. I think this is much bigger than even this article indicates. This forms all of us. It makes us so inwardly focused. It cultivates a selfishness in all of us. It's not just those kids, it's all of us. Swipe, swipe, swipe. We get to mute, we get to curate our spaces, and no contact orders are sometimes seen as an offline extension of that, a way to formalize emotional or interpersonal boundaries through institutional means. And so you've got all of these issues swirling on campus where somebody, it's a different political bent and somebody has a sign, it's a pro-life, whatever. And it's, they're just, it causes them to not feel safe. Where does that come from? My thesis, social media. Now, granted, it's all, but social media only helps cultivate and fertilize. It's there already. We do like everything our way. I get it. That's why Burger King is still in business. You can have it your way because you're the king. And we like that. And the kids are being fed that and affirmed that every single time they swipe. And the result? Human swiping. Mom and Dad, please take a look at that device that you're thinking about giving to your kid. Think long and hard before you let them become human swipers. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.